Amy, on this podcast, we try to always offer useful takeaways. And if you learn nothing else from us, learn this useful parenting lesson by Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 are the ultimate parent hack, the best diaper to use as soon as your baby starts standing or walking. Instead of ordinary diaper tabs, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your wild child.
Pampers Cruisers 360 makes it so easy to change your baby. Who probably doesn't stop moving just because they need a diaper changed? Just slide on to apply and away they go.
And fear not, parents. Pampers Cruisers 360 offers an up to 100% leak-free fit. And they just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we say more?
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand. Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupons, savings, and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
My husband is so annoying and I'm trapped with him.
What fresh hell?
Laughing in the face of motherhood.
Stay calm and make the macaroni and cheese.
With Margaret Apples
and Amy Wilson.
And oh my goodness, we have to do the dishes again for the sixth time today.
A podcast that solves today's parenting dilemmas
so you don't have to.
How are you really?
Hi, this is Margaret.
And this is Amy. This week, we're talking about maintaining momentum in week five. What is that? Is it week five now? Week 80? What is it?
Oh, yeah. It's either week five or week 897. I have to double check my calendar. I'm very glad that we're doing this episode because I feel like I need to not only maintain momentum, but like remember what momentum is. I am in the inertia field. I am the giant boulder that has come to rest. Or my life is that boulder, maybe, but whatever it is, I don't feel like starting to push it again, Amy.
And I think it's okay to rest and take breaks, but then, like, that's your point, right? It's hard to get up again and keep going, but it's also impossible to maintain a cheery, kitchen sweeping, book reading happiness.
The birds alighting on my shoulders as I sing a merry tune.
Right. We cannot do Mary Poppins all the time.
I feel like momentum has this feeling for me of like, there's a panic that it induces in me right now in terms of I take a day off and then it feels like we're drowning in laundry, or we skip a night of cleaning up the kitchen and suddenly like we are under attack by dishes and we'll never catch up. Like it does feel, I'm going to lead off strong with an oldie lux alert.
Back in my day.
It does feel to me like the scene in Indiana Jones where he's running from the boulder. Mm-hmm. Like it's not just the inertia of the boulder that's my life, but that there is this constant boulder of like laundry and keeping everyone cheery and keeping the homeschool going. And oh my goodness, we have to do the dishes again for the sixth time today. Like it feels not so much like I'm not maintaining the momentum, but that the momentum is like chasing me like a boulder that's going to run me over.
Ah, that's interesting. Well, this topic came from Deborah on our Facebook group, and you can find our Facebook group by going to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/whatfreshhellcast. And the reason to join the group is that you can post stuff that's shared by all the other listeners that are in the group. So Deborah said she's finding it difficult to maintain some momentum. She says, I honestly had a few days where I stared at my phone and ignored my 10 and 13 year olds while they fought because I just couldn't muster the energy to do anything. Usually my job as a middle school teacher, even though that's highly rearranged also at this point, gives me motivation. And my kids need me to motivate so they don't get down as well. But it's not always easy. It's a very strange limbo we're in here.
Deborah.
I love that.
Same, Deborah.
The very strange limbo. That is it. So I want to sort of like talk today about what is it sort of psychologically and scientifically about this limbo that's so particular and so weird and so sort of frustrates our things that usually work for us to keep going. Does that make sense?
Yes. And for some of us who already struggle with even having things that work for us, how this might be even harder. I'm talking for a friend named Margaret, who's on this podcast.
So, all right, you ready for some science? I'm going to blind you with science.
I'm not ready for anything, but I'm going to try. I feel like my whole attitude right now, I was talking to somebody the other day who was like, have you tried this? Have you tried this? And I just was like, I've tried everything. But I'm going to maintain a positive attitude, Amy, because you always have suggestions that help me. So I'm sure you'll have
okay.
Them today. No pressure.
Like sort of like, you know, describing the problem accurately is always the first step for me. So do you remember back in episode 142, Letting Others Into Our Mess, which is a really particularly good episode, I think, if you haven't heard that one, we talked about something called cognitive mediational theory, which is that you see a snake and you get scared. But really, there's a mediational step in there, which is you see a snake and your brain starts to tick through, what should I do? Should I scream? Should I run? Should I do that? You know, what are my options here? And it's those options or lack thereof that make you scared. And the way to get past fear is you see the snake, you scream, you run in the house, you slam the door, you live, and now your fear has provided you a way out, right? It gave you the fight or flight thing that saved your life, and now you might be a little less scared the next time you see a snake because you're going to know what to do.
I'm following, and now I need you to connect it for me.
Okay.
To what the heck is going on right now?
So letting other people into our mess, as we talked about, is very useful because, like, while you're screaming because you see a snake, somebody else is looking at you out the kitchen window, and they're not afraid in the way you're afraid. So you have to go to your friends and lean on your friends and reach out because they can help you because they're not experiencing this thing like you are. And so it doesn't seem as huge. And so their perspective is helpful and useful. That is exactly not the case.
For sure. And like to take the snake metaphor for maybe for somebody who it's not speaking to, this is why we like call our friends when a parent is sick, right? Like somebody who is a neutral party is able to help us more effectively.
They provide perspective. Right now, we yes. are all seeing the snake, so to speak, right? Like we are all in it.
Every single one of us is standing on our lawn screaming at a snake at the same time.
Yes, the checkout person at the grocery store, you know, the person who flipped you off in the parking lot.
Our children,
our spouses, the people we're Zooming with and trying to beach. Like we are literally all having this like huge, crazy thing. And so we are unable to provide perspective to one another. And I think that makes this uniquely difficult because we're all in the same, well, we're not in the same difficult, obviously, right? There are some people for whom this is a light drizzle and some for whom this is a hurricane, but everybody in the light drizzle is like, what if I have a hurricane next week, right? I mean, there's nobody who's not worried at all.
Right. Yeah. And I would say people are in like a downpour or a hurricane, like probably, you know, I don't think anybody's in a super light drizzle because we're all dealing with the hardness of it. And the other thing to extend your metaphor that I would say is like, you see the snake on the lawn, you run inside the house, you Google the snake and you say, oh, that's just a harmless garden snake. But there's no outlet like that in this situation either, because no one really knows what's happening or what's going to happen.
That's right. That's exactly right. So I was listening to Brené Brown's new podcast, which like she does not need the shout out, but it's very good. And she was talking about, I recommend it as a very like non, you know, comedy, lighthearted, good perspective. But she defined calm in the episode.
But she is very soothing, man. She's got a soothing voice, soothing thoughts. She's a soothing lady.
Yeah, exactly. So she's like, calm is something you can practice. She says that anxiety is contagious, but so is calm. But then she defined calm as perspective, mindfulness, and the ability to manage emotional reactivity. And I thought that was a great definition, but I was also like, but what perspective? Like you said, like there is no perspective. We're behind the tapestry. How can I be calm in this moment when that perspective is not really possible? You know, you can do the like, well, some people have a worse perspective, but that's not always helpful, especially when the person who has it worse is somebody who's related to you. Like I find myself dreaming about other people. Like an old friend of mine, I was dreaming that he was looking up long-term unemployment benefits on the internet. This is like an old roommate of mine. And he was in my dream last night about that. Like that's one of like 5,000 people I could have that dream about. And like, we're all worrying about everybody, including ourselves.
And we don't feel that we're having as bad an experience as, I mean, you could list 400 horrible, terrible stories from every facet of this. Medical stories, loss of income stories, loss of business stories, you know, loss of connection to other stories. There are so many bad things happening that I think we also kind of give ourselves this feeling of like, well, I'm home safe with my kids. And I find myself saying that to them all the time. And they're kind of like, I get it, but this stinks. And that's the thing. Your heart is hard, as you always say. And
right.
I do think that it is hard to find perspective. But I also think that, and I keep saying this to my husband as we have these endless conversations, that a lot of the touchstone advice that we give on the podcast that you've given me or that someone has given me that I've shared is stuff I keep going back to. And that it all remains true, even in this very difficult time. And one of those pieces is the story you tell yourself. And myself and one of my children are the scions of negativism in the household. You know, we tend to be the people like banging our head against the wall and screaming about how much this stinks. And my husband and one of my children are the like, every day's a kind of okay day, you know, no problems people. And then I have one kind of in the middle. And I do think I can't tell myself the story every day that we're lucky to be healthy. We're lucky to have a comfortable place to be. I can't dismiss what's going on by positiveness that is fake because that doesn't work. But I can be a little bit careful about the story I tell myself. I can be careful about the story of my husband is so annoying and I'm trapped with him. Because sometimes I wake up in that story. And if I tell myself that story all day, that's how my day is going to turn out. I do understand that. Whereas if I tell myself the story of like, hey, I'm actually pretty lucky to be quarantined with a person with a pretty neutral and calm personality. And he's actually like really pleasant to be with and pretty nice. If I can find those moments, you know, my sister calls it evidence gathering, that like once you start the story, if my husband is annoying all day, you're gathering evidence. And guess what? And these times you're gonna find it.
Yeah.
But if you try to gather evidence for my husband's really trying to be so helpful, you'll find that evidence. And I feel like it's a little cliche and it's a little bit Pollyanna and sweet, but that is actually helping me. Like when I get into a dark place, the first thing I try to think to myself is change your story.
Well, I think sometimes we can get mad at the person that we're quarantined with when they're not experiencing what we're experiencing at the same time. Like our spouses and partners have a right to not be processing this in the same way or to have a terrible Tuesday and a really good Wednesday. And where I try to get, I can get frustrated when my partner doesn't see how desperate things are at the moment that I'm seeing them as desperate, but that's actually a wonderful thing, right? That that person can stay calm and make the macaroni and cheese is exactly what needs to happen. And then 3 days later, if he's like, I don't think I can take it anymore, and he's kind of, you know, hiding in our bedroom, that's okay too. Like we need to take turns so we can finish. We can't both feel the same way about this all the time. It's kind of better if we don't. And that's helping me get through it.
And you have to have that perspective, I think, which is what you were saying earlier. Like, this is actually happening to my husband, too, you know, whereas a lot of problems that you have, which is like, oh, you know, the school stuff is just dragging me down and I'm having this conflict with one of the kids' teachers and it's taking up all my time. And you can kind of dump that on your husband and give them that burden. You can't do that here. It's like, right, I'm also experiencing quarantine and a pandemic, you know, it's. That dynamic is nothing that any of us, I don't think, have ever experienced before.
I was reading something about, I tried to figure out who it was that wrote it because I wanted to give them proper credit because this has really stayed with me, that in this moment, it was written sort of at the beginning of all of this, that in this moment, we, for our kids, need to be, we're in the pool with them, right? And we need to be saying, swim to me. Come on, swim to me, swim to me. And you know that old trick that we all do that you like, you back up a little bit, you back up a little bit. And then they're swimming across the pool and they swim across the pool and they don't know. They just think they're swimming to you. And that's what we have to be for our kids in this moment. And that's a great image. But the problem with that is when you're saying swim to me, like, you know how big your pool is or the pool that you're in, right? Even if it's enormous, you know where the wall is. You can sense how far behind you it is or not. You know how far you and your kid have to go and if they can handle it or not. There's no wall behind us here. We have no idea how far we're asking them to swim. And that makes this much, much harder.
And also, again, I'm just going to keep extending your metaphors as you lay them down, Amy. In that pool, your feet are on the ground and you're stable.
You're right.
I feel like in this pool, you're kind of in a dark ocean that's quite wavy. Like, it's just that what makes this hard is like, right, your role, one's role as a mom is to say, you know, I am the keeper of the umbrellas. I am the tender of the hearth. And now you're like, everything's on fire. I have no umbrellas. It's a hurricane. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I think a lot of the metaphors are difficult, but this is where the storytelling helps me in terms of like, okay, I can find a lot of moments in the day where I have my feet on the bottom of the pool. I can't really control the macro of how this all turns out, but I can control what's going on in my house. In my house, in my space, I do have my feet on the bottom of the pool.
Uh-huh.
In the realm of questions about how does this turn out? When does life get back to normal? Is there ever going to be an end to this? I'm in wavy territory. But there are many times of the day where in handling the day-to-day, I do have my feet on the bottom of the pool. And I can be that person saying, swim to me.
So we have to talk about how to find more of those moments during the day, right? We're not going to be there all the time, but how to find those moments. So why don't we talk about that more?
I think that's right. All right, we'll be right back.
Margaret, exciting news. I am about to have a new baby nephew. And believe it or not, this will be my 13th nephew.
Amy, you're ready to give up your amateur status. You're a pro aunt at this point.
Our family has seen a lot of babies. And as soon as they start standing or walking, I send them all a whole lot of Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 don't have ordinary diaper tabs. Instead, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your newly mobile little one.
Pampers Cruisers 360 offer a gap-free fit that is up to 100% leak-proof, crucial once your baby is quite literally up and at them. And that gap-free fit helps prevent your baby from taking off their diaper, a habit you do not want them to get into.
You can say that again. And Pampers Cruisers 360 just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we even elaborate on the need for that, friends? For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
More and more, you hear about the importance of electrolytes as part of staying hydrated, because you need the sodium and the potassium, not just the water. And whether you're looking to hydrate during a workout, while traveling, or at the end of a long night, Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes have got you covered with over 65 trace minerals, 7 essential vitamins, and coconut water powder.
Crisp and refreshing and without any sugar, this is hydration powered by Sports Research. They're little packets you can just grab and take with you to mix into your water bottle on the go. My favorite flavor so far, Amy, gotta be the cherry pomegranate.
Interesting. My high schooler likes the lemon lime, and she keeps a few handy in her backpack for days that she has practiced after school. These electrolytes have the sodium and the potassium that you need to go with it in the optimal ratio for daily hydration.
Visit sportsresearch.com and use code WHATFRESH at checkout for 50% off your purchase of Hydrate.
That's Sports Research, SportsResearch, sportsresearch.com, and use code WHATFRESH for 50% off your Hydrate electrolytes order.
Okay, we're back, Amy. What are you going to help us find now? Something very crucial, I hope. Oh, moments where our feet are on the bottom of the pool. Let's do it.
Yes. Moments where our feet are on the ground. But first of all, I do want to like continue to just highlight that this really is hard for moms in a difficult way, because we're doing this not just for ourselves, but the people around us. There was a study in The Lancet. I'll put the link on the show page. They sort of have collected, like, here's what we have found out from China so far. They're a couple months ahead of us. They're coming out of it, we hope. You know, here's what we've been able to glean. And they did a study that showed that the mental health impact of extended isolation was higher in cases where parents were quarantined with children. And the other thing that was interesting is they found...
Hashtag agree.
Yes, hashtag agree. And they also backed up something you said, I think it was last week, you surmised that it might be even harder to quarantine with one kid than with no kids, or with multiple kids. And that was, in fact, the case.
So they said one kid is hardest.
They said one kid is harder than multiple kids. I mean, the study...
That seems great to me.
People coming out of it, you know, reported how hard it was for them, how bad their, like, their stress levels were and still are, P.S. And yes, the parents with one kid at home seem to have had the highest stress levels during and after than people who had either no kids or people who had multiple kids who at least sometimes can entertain one another. So if you're a mom with one kid.
And age is important. Because,
sure.
I mean, I have friends who have like one 12-year-old and it's not that bad. That kid's reading a lot. One 4-year-old, very, very hard.
Yes. very hard.
Or like a four-year-old and a baby, like any child who can't play alone. That's really, really hard.
Yeah. So, I mean, these things are hard. And I also want to give a shout out to like the sort of invisible work that we talk about all the time. That stuff is becoming really crucial right now, and we're doing more of it. And I mean, I'm sure you've seen all the writing about like in this time, as we're all doing a lot more cooking and cleaning and housework, and everybody's home all the time, there's more laundry and da da. In almost every household, the woman in a, you know, heterosexual relationship, the woman is taking on more of the work, because of course, if somebody has a sick kid, the woman is putting off her conference calls, is making dinner, is worried about, like, if it's the mom's night to be in charge of dinner, she's like, okay, we have two cans of mushrooms and some egg noodles. I guess I could do a thing. And I really have to use up that little bit of beef. And when it's the dad's night to order in, it's pizza. That's not always the case, but it's often the case. And that is hard. And just because this is a mom's podcast, I want to say, like, yeah, I get it. We see it. It's real.
Oh, guys, we see it.
Some of our listeners wrote in the Facebook group about how it really wasn't so bad at first, but now maybe feeling a little bit different. Diva said, do you know that touched out feeling? I'm absolutely noised out. I'm going insane. And then Rachel said, I'm touched out, noised out, questioned out. It's torture.
Yeah. I mean, I remember my sister-in-law saying that to me years and years ago before I had kids. Like, it's very hard to maintain like a nice relationship with your husband when she had four kids, you know, like you're breastfeeding and someone's on your body all day, every day. Like, you're just like, the last thing you're looking for is a sense of touch at the end of the day. And that's right. You're kind of everything out. Your stories about Pokemon out, your how the Marvel universe is set up out, like, I feel like when you only have your kids talking to you a couple of hours a day, you can keep that fake smile on your face during the talk about how Minecraft works. But it's a lot of time listening to these people.
Mm-hmm.
And they're making, you don't even realize. I remember I went to a back to school night and one of the teachers was like, you need to talk to your kids about the humming. Like, she could not take any more humming, you know, in a class. And I remember kind of at the time being like, oh, that's a little intense. But man, she wasn't wrong. It's just five people. Or let me say three people who make noise all the time. It's a lot. I remember my freshman year roommate was, I don't know what the word for it is, but she constantly made noise. I mean, she hummed, she talked to herself. So I would be trying to study in the room and she, oh, look at this. Maybe I should wear these leggings. Huh? Dun, 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 dun. She just always made noise. And it was the most frustrating relationship of my life. I eventually traded out of that room. I couldn't take it anymore. And that's what I live with now all the time. Someone is always making noise in this house.
I had a child who the nursery school teacher mentioned to me, like, did you notice that your child hums while they eat? And I was like, no, because they ate lunch together in the classroom. And it was only after she mentioned it that I was like, oh, I guess he does. Like at the dinner table, like, like constantly while he was eating.
Oh, my condolences. Is horrible.
Well, now, you know, yeah, now I have noticed. I mean, that child who is a teenager who is spending a lot of time not with me right now, which is often a saving grace. But then there's also sometimes we're spending together that are very nice. And I did notice that while doing a puzzle that this same child, now much older, was going doing the puzzle.
Amy, this makes me think that we need to do a survey on the Facebook page that is, what is your new quarantine phrase? Because what you're making me realize, and I had never thought of this until we were just talking about right now, is my new quarantine phase is, who's ever making that noise, please stop. I say that 8 to 12 times a day, every single day, because it's in the car. Someone's just ticking something against something else, just knocking a spoon against a window. Like,
yes,
whatever it is, someone is always making a noise. And I don't think before this started, I've ever said that. And now easily 12 times a day, who's ever making that noise, please stop, is my quarantine phrase.
I've got one mouth noisemaker and definitely one, like, how can I make noise with this object I have in my hand? Like pen tapper, like foil cruncher, like just, yeah. Yeah, I feel you.
Before this started, I had a child. This was probably 6 months ago. And I said, what are you doing? And she said, oh, I figured out I can make this really annoying noise with my mouth. And she was just doing it because she figured out she could. And now that's everybody all the time. My husband and I like to do jigsaw puzzles together. And like, I mean, it's been said before, but I really have yelled at him 3 times. Like, why are you breathing like that? But he's just breathing. But it's very annoying to listen to other people 24 hours a day.
Everybody has misophonia now. It used to be just a couple of us. Now it's...
Yes, we've talked about that on the podcast. It's a weird thing that Amy has where noises annoy you, but we all have it now. We're all sufferers.
Right. Only certain noises and sometimes like only certain people making those noises. It's, you know, and you know it's you, so you work on it. But yeah, now it's... I'm hearing a lot more people talk about it all of a sudden. A lot of forced exposure.
And it's the kind of thing, we've also talked about this, that I used to be a marathon runner. And when I was trying to get to, you know, 26 miles, you would run as far as you can, and then you would stop running, and then you would start running again when you felt you could run again. But every time you start running, you can run shorter, right? So like, you may take off and be able to run 3 miles, mm-hmm. but then once you stop, you take off and you only run another mile, but then you stop and then you only run a half a mile. Like, you're getting weaker. And I feel like noise tolerance is the same way. Like, in the beginning, I could tolerate annoying noises for maybe a minute, but now I can only tolerate annoying noises for like 0.4 seconds.
I was thinking about the marathon because having never run a marathon, but I, you know, have had many people who have run the New York City Marathon, and you're getting really tired and you're running up First Avenue, and I think it's like mile 19 or something. You're getting pretty tired.
It's a bad mile, Amy. It's a real bad mile. I've done it.
It's a bad mile, but First Avenue is like wall-to-wall people, you know, cheering and waving, and you know you can do it. Because even though there's this really bad hill ahead in the Bronx, you're at mile 19. You're like, I know how much farther I have to go. And
we're back to our favorite metaphor. How long is this marathon exactly?
Right.
Are we in mile 1 or mile 24? We're probably not in mile 24.
No. Heaven help us. I hope we're not in mile 1. But yeah, we don't know how long. And so it's impossible to calibrate your reserves of strength and patience when you don't know how long you're going to need them for. So I just feel like we kind of need some new rules. Can I ask you something else?
Sure, Amy. Why not? Just don't ask, how's it going? That's my advice.
How are you really? That's what I want to know.
No, you don't want to know. We don't have that kind of time, Amy.
I have talked on the show many times about how Margaret can talk a dog off a meat wagon. Like, you go anywhere with Margaret and she gets immediately into truly deep, meaningful, funny, heartfelt conversations with literally like whoever is standing behind you in line. Like, you know, like, you just do that. You just talk to people and connect with people. And I am very happy to, you know, turtle shell it more. Do you think this is harder for people like you than for people like me, this extended isolation?
Yes, I do. I mean, I'm always wary. I was having this conversation with my sister the other day, who's kind of cut more from your cloth. I'm always wary. I feel like we've talked on the podcast about people who say, I'm the kind of person who blah, 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 blah. Because they're almost always wrong. You know, people who are like, I'm the kind of person who is very, you know, shy. You're like, I don't see you as shy. Whatever.
Yes.
But people are bad self-definers. And I also think it's always dangerous to say, this is harder for me than it is for other people, because it's always easier to think it's harder for you than for other people. But my sister was saying to me the other day, I think this is probably harder for you than most people. And I almost started crying because I thought, I think this is really much harder. I feel like a plant that is dying without water and sunshine. Like, my need for a variety of human contact during the day and my desire to speak and learn about different people constantly is a much bigger part of my life than I realized before this happened. And it's really getting me depressed.
Yeah. And then it's something that Zoom happy hours or whatever don't entirely fill, because I see that in you, this like true curiosity about every human you encounter. How can I make friends with this person, learn about this person? What can I talk to them about? Like, you just do that more than almost anybody I've ever met. And
you literally can't do that. I mean, I went out the other day, there's a sandwich store down that I can walk to, and I walked over and they have it nicely set up so that you're outside of a window and you order your food. And you don't realize, I haven't been out that much. My husband usually does the grocery runs. I was wearing a mask. Now you have to wear a mask in New York. I was wearing a mask and the person behind the counter was wearing a mask and we're standing 6 feet apart. And I was just trying to order a sandwich. And normally, as Amy says, that would be for me if there was no line. How's it going? How's the story going? Like, I would learn that person's entire life history. And instead I was like, avocado. And he says, what? And I'm like, I'm acting it out because you don't realize how much you read people's. You cannot have a casual conversation with another person in this time at all.
It's true.
And the Zoom thing for me, like I do Zooms with a ton of people and it's fine. But even Zoom is not the same. You can't. Even at a cocktail party in general, or even at a family gathering in general, I like to chat with somebody for a half an hour and then chat with someone else. It's like the turn-taking conversation that's involved. It's not my forte. I'm definitely struggling. I think what I need to do is just, someone needs to invent like a random, like a Zoom chat randomizer where I would just get paired with a different person every 5 minutes.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I'd be like, hey, what's up? What's your story? Someone invent that app, please, for me.
I think you should. You should get the credit for that.
I don't, Amy. Amy, please. I'm barely getting through the days. I can't invent an app right now. I'm hoping one of our listeners will run with this because I would love that. If there was a Zoom randomizer where I could just, it would like, you know, boom, and it would stop on someone and I could be like, where do you live? What's up? How's it going there? That would be my heaven.
Just to take the other side for a minute, Marianne on our Facebook page said it's not so easy for introverts either. She said that my almost 9-year-old is my very chatty shadow. And I think that's hard too. I don't really miss talking to strangers and making small talk. I do not need that cup filled, but...
But why is it hard for introverts? Because extroverts are talking to them?
Because their extroverted child is quarantined at home with them. Yes. Yeah. Like what you were saying before about, like, let me tell you about,
I mean,
Minecraft.
Apologies. Just thank God you're not quarantined with me. My husband is so sick of me. It's not pretty over here, guys. All right. We'll be right back. Hello, Hellions. You know we listen to a lot of podcasts that aren't our own. And today we want to tell you about a podcast that really speaks to us and will speak to any parent of a child with special education needs.
The podcast is called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Ortube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs.
The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. One of my kids has an IEP, and I found this podcast so validating and so helpful. I feel better equipped to advocate for my child's educational needs now.
This podcast is helpful for parents in many different situations, whether your child already has an IEP or you're just starting to wonder if they might need extra support in the classroom. Juliana has content for kids of all ages and for kids who are learning English as an additional language as well.
To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.
And now, some quarantine metaphors
from the What Fresh Hell podcast.
Listen, people, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. But the only thing is that you don't, in this marathon, actually know where the finish line is. Like, this marathon might be seriously like 400-500 miles long. You literally have no way of knowing. Oh, and also in this marathon, no one is cheering for you from the sidelines. Instead, the people on the sidelines are children who are telling you that you're not as good at fractions as their real teacher.
It's like you've been rolling the boulder of your life, and now it's come to a complete stop. So it's hard to get that boulder moving. In fact, it's so hard to get it moving that it's actually moving backwards, straight towards you, and then crushing you under its weight. So I guess I'm saying it's like being crushed by a really heavy boulder.
When you think about quarantine, it's a lot like going to the gym. Do you want to go to the gym? No. No, you do not. But the thing is, when you do go to the gym, you know what you do? You get stronger. I mean, except for that at this gym, literally, whenever you try to talk to another person, the only thing they will talk to you about is sourdough starter. And also, when you try to leave, the doors are locked from the outside.
I like to think of quarantine like a long winter. And we're all just waiting for spring to come. Like, you know how in winter, sometimes the snow gets really, really deep and covers all the doors so you can never, never get outside. And it's like a really tiny cabin, you know, like that kind of winter. And also, inside the cabin, there's a child, and he never, ever stops talking about Pokemon.
Okay, whoever is making that noise, please stop.
This has been Quarantine Metaphors
from the What Fresh Hell podcast. Okay, so time to talk about what will actually work in this moment.
Amy, I'm going to try. As I've said before, I feel like currently in my mindset, I am not, quote, available to learn, unquote. But since this is an advice podcast and we're trying not to just take people on a 45-minute listen to Margaret complain journey, I am going to try to open my heart and my mind to your advice and suggestions.
We're going to reset what the momentum is that we need to maintain.
Okay, but before we do that, I want to just give a quick shout out to all my people on Facebook who supported the fact that I don't like seeing ugly people in movies and that I hate cooking. My sisters who took my side and gave me companionship in that dark time, thank you. I salute you.
Yeah, you need to know. You need to know you're an extrovert. You need to know those people are out there for you.
Love it.
So Paul Olinger says that we should imagine ourselves on a, you know, very long flight with a cranky baby, maybe ear infection, maybe throwing up on you. We can all, I'm sure, put ourselves in that place very easily. And Paul Olinger is the host of Crazy Money podcast, by the way. This was actually an article he wrote for Medium. He said, this flight that we are all on is very much delayed, that travel conditions are, to put it mildly, suboptimal, and that each of us in this moment should have in mind only one goal, to arrive safely and in one place. If you are in that plane with a throwing up baby, like, all you have to do is get there, right? You are not going to listen to Duolingo while you're in the air. You are doing one thing.
Right. This is not the time to be Amy with your laptop open, like updating all your spreadsheets while you're flying with the vomiting baby.
That's right.
I will say the metaphor of the plane flight gives me like unbelievable panic attack in terms of just the...
It's not your favorite place.
Well, I had a very bad plane flight once that I think I've discussed in the podcast. I was once on a plane with all my kids and we got in a horrible storm and got hit by lightning and it was awful. And so any thought of being stuck on a plane at my panic level is not a helpful metaphor for me. But I take the larger point, which is, I think this is something that I really need to think about right now, is we can just sum up, I believe, Mr. Olinger. Is that his name? Olinger. Mr. Olinger's point, don't be extra. And I think that that's what I need to remember, because I think that I just found today that I went to exercise and I'm having a lot of trouble with my exercising. Amy, are you finding this to be true? Exercise harder?
Yes, that you're not exercising at your same usual level. Yes, yes. I'm out of breath sooner. I don't want to do it sooner. All of it.
Yeah. And I'm getting bored, like, which is making me laugh. Even like a 40-minute like walk on the treadmill, after 20 minutes, I'm bored. And I'm like, what am I bored for? What am I rushing back to? Like, more of the kids yelling? I mean, I would think that I would find it very much a respite right now, and I am not finding it that way. And so I'm finding myself getting into the story of, since I can't do a 40-minute hard workout, I'll do nothing at all. And that's a problem. I need to do 20 minutes every day of a little bit of something. But I have a little bit of a feeling of like, well, then I fail the test. So that's not fun. There is no test. No one's testing me.
Well, what he says is that we, you know, that yes, we should not take unreasonable and optimistic goals on at this time because we are already operating at a very high level. Deborah, who introduced this topic on the Facebook page in the first place, who spent an afternoon ignoring her kids and looking at her phone, is operating at a very high level. She is ushering her family through weeks and weeks of this situation. And so, like, yeah, you have to remember that if you can't also do the workout to your usual level, like, of course not. You've got cortisol coursing through you. I am not a physician, but there's bad stuff happening right now.
Nor did you stay at a Holiday Inn last night, but you are willing no. to give medical advice.
I'm going to hold forth. Our bodies are not acting the way that they're supposed to be acting right now, but I want to give you an exercise thing that actually helped me. I was taking an exercise class today and it was one of those like, okay, now let's do some burpees.
Oh, no, I will never do some burpees.
Now let's get our heart rate down. Now let's do this. And she was saying, as you were going through like a mountain climber thing that you don't want to be doing. And like I said, I am not operating at my usual level right now, but I'm doing what I can do. And she was like, the moment that you want to stop, notice that. You want to escape. You want to take a breather. You want to look at your phone. You want to stop. You can't stop. You have to keep going. And that she used that as a metaphor also for this moment of, oh, I want to stop. It made me think, one, she's right, but two, okay, so then I will stop when I want to. I will look at my phone when I want to because I'm in this larger, you know, amusement park ride that I cannot get off. I'm going to look at my phone once in a while and not feel guilty about it.
Also, the differentials in your stuff, it's like I tend to think of, okay, either Pinterest dinner or takeout failure. And the fact of the matter is hot dogs with some of those like crackly peas out of a bag, it's fine. It's not such a big deal. And walking for half an hour and running for 30 minutes, it's not like one's good and the other's bad. They're actually pretty close to each other, really. So just, you know, there used to be, do you remember the old, ready for an oldie lux alert, Amy?
Oh boy, yes.
Back in my day. Old Saturday Night Live skit that was about, it was a dating show called Lowered Expectations.
I think that was Mad TV.
Oh, it probably was Mad TV. You're exactly right.
But it's old deluxe either way.
Oh, it's so old I don't remember. But it was like a dating service and it was like lowered expectations. And the idea was, you know, this is the only way you're really going to find someone. And the lowered expectations song comes into my head like 14 times a day now. And I just think to myself, it might be time to lower my expectations.
It's the only way.
It's the only way forward, like in the dating joke.
Yeah. Like, it's okay to sit down for a while, like maintaining consistent, like staying on the Peloton for 60 minutes. And it gets the thing about taking a spinning class is it's easier 15 minutes in than it was right at the beginning, right? Like as your wheel goes around more and more, there's something about that that keeps you moving. I don't think that we should be applying those principles of physics and, you know, metaphoria to the current moment because I don't think they apply.
Wait, I also think I horribly disagree with your premise. A spin class gets easier 15 minutes in?
Don't you think that like the first like 2 minutes of a spin class, you're like, I can't do, like it's hard to make the wheel go around and your legs are tired and then 15 minutes in, you're fine? Not you, huh?
I don't think so. I think it's all torture.
I'll table that.
I mean, I think the 2 minutes before it begins is the hardest. Like getting right. there is the hardest, but then it's all hard. I don't know that the first 2 minutes is easier.
Well, can I give you another bit of advice?
I guess, Amy. I mean, I'm trying to stay open-hearted. I'm not going to lie. I'm trying. I'm really trying.
And no, you don't have to like any of this. None of this has to work for anybody.
Your advice is not going to be more grateful, right?
No.
That for the things I have?
No.
Okay, that's the advice I don't want anymore.
This is some neuroscience advice. It's not mine.
Okay. I'm going to try to be available to learn. Available to learn.
It's going to make you feel better.
Okay.
So Dr. Judson Brewer says...
Come on, Dr. Judson Brewer.
In this moment of extended, you know, stress with no clear endpoint...
Hellaciousness.
Hellaciousness. When it comes to information... The closer to now that you stay, the more clearly you will be able to think.
We call this, and I wrote a blog post about it, and I'll try to find it. We call this next lamppost.
Ah.
And we've talked about it before on the podcast. When you're doing long distance running training, so I used to run marathons. Now I can't even be in a spin class for 10 minutes, but I used to be a runner. And we used to always just say next lamppost, like you can't run 5 more miles. That's impossible, but you can run to the next lamppost. And so you just have to make it bite sized.
Yeah.
And so there are periods of one's life. I have given this advice to people all the time. And I always describe it as next lamppost is you're in the middle of a horrible breakup with like the person you thought you were going to marry and they just left you. And it's horrible. You can't worry about anything else but getting through the next hour, you know, whatever horrible thing. And this is for all of us next lamppost time.
I mean, it's a classic 12-step advice too, right? Like one day at a time. It is corny, but it works. And so, you know, what Dr. Brewer is saying, like, is don't worry about will there be college for my junior a year from now? Will there be summer camp in 2 months? Will there be, right? Like, will there be this kind of test by next week? I don't know, but I can decide what's for dinner. I can go walk the dog for 20 minutes. I can bring the closer to now very close to me and not worry about the rest of it. That is helping me, I have to say.
It's helpful. This is something my kids are struggling with, and we have developed a language around it that I think is working pretty well. My anxiety dude right now, it's a lot of this. Like, what if it never comes back? What if we're never going back to school? What if next summer we can't, blah, blah, blah? And it's a little hard for him to hear this, like, let's just worry about today. That's not his strong suit, and it's not the way his mind is operating around this thing. But we have a conversation that we go back to called, is mommy worried about this? And so it helps them frame it a little bit, like, what if we never go back to school? Okay, is mommy worried about that? No, I know that you are going back to school. And so I'm not worried about that at all. Like, what if the big family trip, we decided to once as a family do Disney World. We're supposed to do it in September. What if that trip gets canceled? Is mommy worried about it? I'm medium worried about it. But what I keep thinking is, even if we can't do it this September, we will just postpone it and it'll be even more fun when we do it, you know? And somehow putting it on myself, it helps them see it in a different way. And like, mommy knows what to worry about and what not to worry about. And I'm still doing this with my 11-year-old, you know? I mean, I think it helps them frame it.
I love this. And do I have a mommy that I can make sure is worrying about this stuff? Okay.
You can call me Amy and I'll be like, is mommy worried about the fact that you may never be able to go to a hair salon again? Mommy's not that worried about it, Amy. Don't worry.
And then the trick is to go be by ourselves and not worry about it, right? To not pretend not to worry about it.
Well, that is the hard thing too, though, but you're joking, but literally, I mean, I feel like part of becoming a mother is, I have in my adult life often found myself in situations where I thought to myself, when does the parent come? You know, my husband and I were involved in a very bad accident. And I remember dealing with many things about that accident. And I'm like, this is the part where I call my mommy or daddy to come do this for me, you know? But I'm at that point a 35-year-old woman, you know, 3,500 miles away from my parents. And, you know, I've organized funerals for family members. Yeah. And I'm always like, wait, when does the mom come and do this? When does the dad come? Like, even as a middle-aged woman, I still often have the feeling of like, when does someone come and take care of me? And I think that this situation is very, very taxing for us in that way. Of like, there, you really are the top of the mountain and there's no one else.
Yes, we spend, that's why it's so hard for us as moms in this moment, because we're spending our days taking care of little ones and taking on their anxieties and reassuring them. You know, you're just carrying a lot right now.
And our usual outlets, like, they come to the top of the mountain to see the guru, which is us.
Right.
And normally we can go out and then go to the top of our own mountains, which are maybe still our parents, maybe our best friends, maybe a trusted. But like, you're really missing that experience of like, you're just the top of the mountain and there's no top of the mountain for you.
Right. And it's a lot more helpful when you go to your best friend. And as we were saying earlier, and she can stand completely outside it and give you relaxed advice and not be like, you think that's bad.
No. She's like, sorry, ma'am, I've got problems of my own.
Right.
Sounds terrible at your house, but let me tell you, I ain't got time for this.
That's just where we are. And so I think that I've come around to thinking that instead of trying to figure out how to maintain momentum, we should instead give ourselves the grace to sit on the couch and ignore our kids for an afternoon, to not maintain momentum, to go a little sideways on this because we don't know how long it will be. And we have to figure out a new way of getting through this that our old sort of chestnuts don't necessarily hold up for.
Yeah. I mean, I think some of the like parenting chestnuts in terms of like, figure out, you know, lots of advice of like figuring out how things work day to day still do hold up. But the idea, and I think, Amy, that this is a first for our podcast. I think usually like we start on a topic such as maintaining momentum and we think, well, yes, we should do that. How? And that we're solving this one by being like, yeah, let's not do that.
Don't maintain momentum. Yeah.
It's really not about maintaining momentum right now. It's about getting through the day. It's really just about like whatever gets you through the day. And there is no, we've talked about before, secondary expectations. Like, don't run a marathon and think that you're going to lose weight. You know, don't go to a party and think you're going to meet your husband there, whatever it is. Like, when you attach a secondary expectation, you ruin the joy of the experience by attaching this other expectation to it. This is not even a joyful experience. Like, attaching secondary expectations to, I'm going to be the best homeschooler, I'm going to keep up with the Pinterest moms who are making, you know, themed meals every night and printing out. I had a friend last night on a Zoom call say, she's like, you know, for the first 2 weeks, I printed out menus. Like, she thought like, oh, this will be fun. We'll make a cafe in the kitchen every night. And she's like, oh, yeah, yeah, that's long gone. Now it's like cereal for dinner again.
Right.
But you don't have to make this not happening. You don't have to make it fun. You don't have to make sure that they are the best at homeschool. You don't even have to homeschool them if it's not working for you.
No, you do not have to get closer as a family while you're doing this. You just have to do it.
But I do think, like, in actually talking this through, Amy, I have had some of that revelation of like, it stinks for everybody and it's okay that it stinks, and that your only job is to go to bed at night and wake up the next morning and do it again. Like, there is no other expectation.
The one I'm going to take away from this is Paul Olinger's quote that you are already operating at a very high level. I'm going to put that in my kitchen somewhere I can see it.
I am already operating at a very... Mom, can I have a snack? I am already operating at a very high level. Love it.
Yep.
Guys, we want to know how you're not maintaining momentum. Our Facebook group right now is such a great place. Come to facebook.com/groups/whatfreshhellcast and join our Facebook group, because it is where all the cool quarantine moms are hanging out. They're exchanging funny memes. They are giving each other support, and they are being cool, fun people, and they are not ever being mean to people or we make them leave.
That's right. It's an oasis for these times.
It's an oasis in the storm. It's a port in the storm.
We're also on Instagram at WhatFreshHellCast, and you can always find us on our website, WhatFreshHellPodcast.com.
Guys, follow us everywhere. Check us out, and we can't wait to talk to you next week.
So long.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced, so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.